meow, 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 meow.
Meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza, broadcasting from Financial Beast Plaza in the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. We're keeping a sin flood of statism out of your brain by bombarding your frontal lobe and warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Lou and Davi? Is it working, Lou and Davi?
It sure is.
Yeah.
What in the happy Halloween was that?
That was the new intro. I got kind of tired of years of, this is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. You guys weren't sick of that?
I couldn't even pronounce half of the words you said, let alone memorize them.
Yeah.
My God, how am I supposed to imitate you from here on out?
I had to write that out and I'm still tweaking it. So don't imitate it yet. It's still a work in progress.
It's not for broadcast yet.
Well, we are live. And I'd like to say good evening, good afternoon, Slidell, and good afternoon, New Orleans. We are welcoming WSLA 1560 AM. In Slidell, Louisiana, which also reaches the whole New Orleans metropolitan area. But, you know, it's Slidell. You got to say Slidell first. So good afternoon, Slidell and New Orleans. Yeah, that's and New Orleans. I lived in New Orleans for a couple months. Maybe it was a couple years. You know, if you remember how long you actually lived there, you probably weren't there. But
And Michael,
I can't say like I live there, like, you know, like I know anything about it. I was just a couple months in New Orleans is really just a weekend that you can't wake up and get to the airport from, I think.
Well, you don't have that that Cajun drawl, because I believe they call it Nawlands.
Yeah. So you say, you Yankee.
I got Facebook friends from Nawlands.
that makes you an expert. And nah, I liked it there. I lived on Esplanade. I'm probably saying that wrong. Someone's probably screaming at the radio right now. I lived on Esplanade, right across from Checkpoint Charlie's, above that little, it was an art gallery at the time. I've lived there. Actually, I was living in California at the time, but I was dating two different women, two different times, not at the same time, over a period of years. I guess I'll say this, New Orleans is a place where the women are worth traveling to from when you live in San Francisco, which is, you know, filled with like, you know, crazy pretty girls that like to be crazy and pretty, but like they weren't crazy and pretty enough for me. So I had to go to New Orleans. That's what kind of town it is. And I appreciate that in a town and I like it, man. Yeah.
And the New Orleans women weren't crazy like the San Francisco women, right?
Different kind of crazy, man. A little more sophisticated kind of crazy, I think, would be what it is. And I'm not speaking of all women in New Orleans. I'm speaking of, you know, a couple people I knew.
So crazy good instead of crazy California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Worms.
Yeah. Yeah. Explain worms for our new listener. We say worms a lot here on the Freedom Fiends. Oh, first of all, I just want to say, Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. Okay, that's out of the way. Explain worms.
And he puts the execute in the executive branch.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
Worms is one of our catchphrases here, and it comes from, I believe it was a drummer of Counting Crows. Is that correct?
It was the guitar player. David Immergluck from Counting Crows used to play in my band Slish in San Francisco. I was in a band called Bomb before that. We played in New Orleans, but nowhere you'd remember because our gig got canceled. And we ended up playing in a backyard party that got closed down by the police. Yeah, it was David Immergluck from the Counting Crows. Used to say worms instead of word back in the 90s when word was already about 15 years out of date. He said worms as a joke. He said it to me like four times in 1995 or 96 and probably has completely forgotten about it. And we've kind of picked it up as a banner on the Freedom Fiends. Now, Lou explained a little bit of it. Now, Lou Sanderfiend did. Now, Davi Barker, jump in there and tell me what a warrant canary is and why worms is our warrant canary.
Well, a warren canary is something that you say or you set up as a sort of stable state because when you receive letters from the NSA or whatever, they usually include, what is it, a Homeland Security letter usually includes a, you're not allowed to talk about this. And so rather than talking about it, we don't talk about it. So if you ever hear us stop saying worms and instead say word, that would mean that we were contacted by the government and we're not allowed to talk about
it. Yeah, if we do it consistently, like for a whole show, like if we just slip and say word, worms, that doesn't mean it. But it's, yeah.
I never
slip. It would be the end of an era on the show.
I say worms in real life.
Yeah, the thing about like with those NSA, I think they're called the Patriot Act letters, which means it should
kill all the patriots.
Yeah, it's the Jail All the Patriot Act, Jail All the Patriots Act, and yeah, I got my morning coffee here. I got a little bit of crawfish juice in it. Something's going on here.
That's what's missing. I didn't make coffee.
We can. Do you want to go take a break and Luke can fill in for you and you can go make coffee?
Nah, I think I'm all right. I'll do it over the break.
Okay. Yeah. I got mugged in New Orleans, but that's probably something for a different show, you know? Yeah.
You know, with the story that you told about your show getting canceled and the club, I don't know, canceling it or shutting down or getting raided, whatever, you probably just described about half of the club gigs that happened there from what I hear.
In New Orleans or on tour with my band Bomb?
Yeah, both.
Yeah, you know, some of the most memorable shows, I would say like the one of the shows people are still talking about to this, like people still email me like, I was at that show in 1989. It was the one that got closed down by the police. It was an outdoor show in Grants Pass, Oregon at the college at Rogue Valley Community College. And it was pretty big. It was like 400 or 500 people, which was, we generally played to 50 or 100 people out of town and generally played to 300 to 500 people in San Francisco. But yeah, we drove. It was our first day of our first tour ever. We drove, you know, like the van wasn't working when we were supposed to leave. We were going to get there like a day early and have lots of time to sightsee and stuff. And we were like, you know, our roadie was still fixing the van with like duct tape and chewing gum. And then we up to the moment way past when we were supposed to leave, we jumped in there. We like broke the speed limit all the way from San Francisco to Grants Pass, Oregon. Got there like literally when we were supposed to play. It was like a 5-band show and we were the third or fourth band in it. And we like drove there like 300 or 400 people there outdoors at night. At dusk, and we showed up. We were like, literally, we got there. We found the promoter. He's like, you're supposed to be on stage right now. You don't have time for sound check. Go, go, go. And he got like 8 people to help all grab some equipment and do a bucket brigade to get us on stage in like 3 minutes. And we like, the first song was the sound check. And then we started, people loved it. Then we started playing the second song, and like 8 cops ran on stage and just shut it down. And that's the show people remember even more than, you know, the one where you play an hour and a half and then play 3 encores and you're great.
Well, that sounds pretty darn exciting.
Well, conflict is the essence of drama. And there's nothing like, you know, being something. I mean, we're not a political band. We're kind of all Bomb's lyrics were about like, I don't know, sex and God and drugs and women and God and the devil and women and hope, I guess, if I had to sum them all up. But
such a wonderful combination.
Yeah, but we didn't like cops. You know, like our roadie used to wear a T-shirt all the time that said, help your local police beat yourself up. I thought it was pretty funny. And I always wore a T-shirt, you know, not an anti-interventionist shirt that was, I think, left over from the 60s or 70s. It said, join the army, travel to exotic lands, meet interesting, unusual people and kill them. And yeah, we didn't like the police and the police didn't like us. So like to actually be closed down by the police after a song and a half is kind of part of the performance art of that kind of gig, I guess, you know.
And those are stories that we could spread for through the ages and you'll be famous for that.
Yeah. Or, you know, I talk a lot about my projects and where you can buy them and movies and books I've made, but I don't think I've ever pimped my book. Cause it was my first novel and it was really rough around the edges, but it's called, Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women. It came out in the year 2000. You could buy used copies on Amazon or you can torrent down the file. It's called Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women. It's basically that whole decade with the names changed and a few exaggerations. So yeah, Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women. Go get it, people.
names changed to protect the innocent or guilty?
Guilty, 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 guilty. All right, so what were you cats talking about before the show? I'm going to go put some more crawfish juice in my coffee here.
We're talking about leashes.
Yeah, campaign for a longer leash.
Leash laws for humans. Explain the campaign for a longer leash.
Who are the parties involved? What's the score here?
Who are the injured parties involved?
I don't know if they're really injured. Maybe some hurt feelings or something like that. Basically, what it comes down to is a play on Ron Paul's group Campaign for Liberty, also known as Campaign for a Tiny Bit More Liberty.
And we got to say, Ron Paul is our favorite government thug, and he's no longer a government thug, and he's our only government thug we ever liked. So, it was politics. So go on.
Yeah. Rather than trying to get true liberty, the people in Campaign for a Tiny Bit More Liberty really like constitutional liberty, which means that other people can lay around and collect taxes from them. That big old giant national debt that everybody loves so much, well, that's in Article 1, Section 8. It says that they can borrow like degenerate gamblers and run up a tab and stick other people with it. And I don't know. I'm just all about pure, uncut, untainted liberty, to where I can live my life the way that I see fit, so long as I do not harm others. And essentially, the campaign for a Tiny Bit More Liberty, they don't agree with that. They think that people should lay around and collect taxes from me and from you and from everybody else, and that we should be abused. And that's kind of square. So in the fashion, I had also called it Campaign for a Longer Leash. And one of the guys from Campaign for a Longer Leash was busting my chops one night. You know, my buddy Tom. They was busting his chops too. And next thing I know, there's a Facebook page called Campaign for a Longer Leash.
Yeah, that's the great thing.
You didn't create the page. Someone else made it?
Well, my buddy Tom made it. I think you met Tom at Porkfest, Abby.
Well, that's the great thing about the internet is it used to be if you had a great idea that you wanted to involve people in, you had to like go print up a letterhead and rent an office and get a telephone line or a bank account. Now you just start a Facebook page. Or if you're smart, you start your own website. Yeah, we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Dobby Barker, Lou Sander Fiend, and myself, Michael W. Dean, after this trip to the farmer's market in New Orleans.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Yeah, We should probably also explain, we've explained worms. Let's explain cats. I like cats. I had to go let a cat in on the break. We love cats. We like dogs too, but dogs are kind of slavish and cats are kind of free thinking anarchists. And we like cats as a symbol and as an actuality. What is it they say? Dogs have owners, cats have staff. Well, I just had to go open the back door for my cat. I am cat staff, Michael Dean.
I think cats are pretty self-explanatory.
Maybe not on talk radio. I've never heard someone just meowing at leisure.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We do have a unique reverence for cats.
Yeah, that spills over into our media production. So Davi and Lou, explain the idea of Campaign for a Longer Leash. And then we'll segue into like what we're for and what we're against. Yeah, so go on.
Well, with the Campaign for a Longer Leash, it takes the mini statist limited leash view, you know, of these people. We need to get back to the leash and we need a longer leash and all this other stuff. And I think Butler Schaefer put it best. He said that people who wave their flags as symbols or wave their constitutions as symbols of their liberty remind me of dogs that have learned to carry their own leashes in their mouths. And the reason that I say that is because most of these big time constitutionalists have never read more than the Bill of Rights, and they've glanced over Article 1, Section 8, so they know exactly what the people that call themselves the government are allowed to do to them. They haven't read the whole thing. They don't know that the Fugitive Slave Act is in Article 4, Section 2, Clause 3. They don't know that the indefinite detention provision for NDAA 2012 is in Article 1, Section 9. Yeah, it's in there.
Yeah.
But since they haven't read it, they don't know it, so they say, oh, well, that's unconstitutional. This is unconstitutional. And literally, with all the weasel words that are put in there, it creates a document that allows for just about anything to happen. So unconstitutional is probably one of the most useless words on earth. When you have necessary and proper and general welfare and everything else, I mean, it does not limit government. There's absolutely nothing in there that limits government. If anything, it has created the government that exists today, and at the very least has been powerless to prevent it.
But the other thing is, that's not a new idea. There were people at the time of the framing of the Constitution that were worried that enumerating the rights would make it appear that it was a definitive list and just be a thing for tyrants to attack.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of pushback by, you know, people who lived by the gun about putting in the Second Amendment. They were literally like, why would you ever need to write that down?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a way of looking at it is, I wasn't exactly the most well-behaved in high school. This is going to be also a little bit of a surprise to most people. I knew that I could skip school so many times in a semester before I would get in trouble. I knew that I could skip school so many times before I got kicked out of a class. So guess how many times I skipped school?
As many times as you could without getting kicked out of school.
Right. So,
see, you were doing it wrong. You should have done it one more time and got kicked out of school and just gone to the library and worked like I did and learned.
Well, where do you think I spent my time for the most part? Yeah. But the thing is, when you write down a list of things that you can do to people or that they can do to you, and you accept that they can do these things to you, you can't be surprised when people do it.
You know,
I was having this argument earlier today with somebody, and he was talking about taxation is way out of control, and it's not proportionate to what it should be, and just all this minstatus nonsense. So I asked him, where exactly does it restrict the percentage or the dollar amount that you can have taken away from you?
It does not. Yeah,
it does not.
I know. When people say, when the Tea Party, which is kind of, you know, the Tea Party movement, which is kind of a well-meaning but silly spinoff of a Ron Paul event that was on Tax Day a bunch of years ago. And we like Ron Paul, and he gets it right in that if you're going to play in this silly system with silly rules made up by dead guys who are all tyrants and slave owners, if you want to play by the rules, he's the only one that actually did. Most of the Tea Party people have never really read the Constitution. They've read the Bill of Rights. And, you know, I was kind of attracted to the Tea Party movement about, I don't know, 6 years ago. It seemed like a solution. And I was saying things like, government's horrible, but you need some government, because without some government, there'd be blood in the streets. I'd say with government, there's blood in the streets these days a lot with how cops
shoot
dogs.
Well, there is, objectively.
Yeah.
It's all over the news all the time.
Yeah.
Well, the Tea Party is a pacifier. It is something to take people's minds off of what's really going on. Because, as I said, the Constitution is actually the leash.
Yep.
And in Soviet America, government limits you, not the other way around.
Worms. We'll be back after this trip to the unregulated free market where you can buy all kinds of things.
Worms.
Worms. It might be regulated some places.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at trueshibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. Trueshibes.com.
Here we go. Something creep on the screen. It's not really a clock. Here we go.
Freedom Fiends. So, you know, if you're trying to figure out what I look like and what I sound like, you know the TV show Tremé, which, you know, I know it's a TV show, but I've heard people in New Orleans like it a lot. Because it was probably a little more accurate than other shows been about New Orleans. Although I'm a big fan of the movie Down by Law with Tom Waits and Gianelle, whatever the two. It's the weirdest movie ever.
Certainly more accurate than Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. The author of Anne Rice absolutely was like, didn't she take out a full page ad saying like, I do not want Brad Pitt in my movie. He's not the right character. This is horrible. I do not agree with this, because she sold the rights years ago. And then all of a sudden, like, she did a 180. Like, I saw some of the daily rushes of it, and it's fabulous. And I wholeheartedly concur. I'm wondering, like, what dump truck full of money did they, you know, drop on her gated lawn? I've been to her gated house. Okay,
if you ever she was just persuaded by the performance.
If you ever seen Tremé, yeah, possibly, sure. If you ever seen the show Tremé, the guy who's the DJ at the, you know, the radio station in New Orleans, I look like that guy, but I'm like, you know, 20 years older and I'm a little bit plumper. But that guy, like, I saw that, I'm like, that reminds me so much of a young me. So,
in modern day, think Uncle Fester with a little bit of hair.
Thanks, guys. You can go to the freedomfiends.com website, and there's a picture of all of the hosts at the top of the page. I am the kind of Uncle Festery looking one in the middle there. Yeah.
And for me, think of Khalif KSM in his Guantanamo picture with his hair all messed up.
Yeah. You're a neckbeard hipster. And Dobby's also a neckbeard hipster. But so I had a question. We were talking about the Constitution, and, you know, I'm not saying get rid of the Constitution and put in a Soviet style. No, we're not communists. We're capitalists. We're anarcho-capitalists, which is kind of like libertarians who walk their talk. And we're actually voluntarists, which means,
well, the Constitution is more communist than capitalist.
There you go. Yeah.
And the Soviet Constitution was modeled closely after the U.S. Constitution. Lenin, Trotsky, and all those other Bolshevik
Trotskyites.
Bleepers. They were big fans of the founding lawyers and the coup and the takeover. They just didn't do it bloodlessly like the founding lawyers did.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, like, if you think about it, I mean, so it's an enumerated set of individual rights, but, like, it's not a treatise on private property and economics. I mean, the general welfare is as communist of a concept as anything.
Yeah, and it's not defined. It basically means whatever wise, landed, white, rich men decided is, you know.
Right. The Central Planning Committee. And also, eminent domain would not be a good example of protecting property rights either.
That's a good point.
Taking it for state use. How do you get more communist than that?
Yeah. And the Interstate Commerce Clause is really
the interfering with Interstate Commerce Clause.
Yeah. There's some bad parts in there. So I guess what we're saying is a bunch of things. One is, before you say, we got to get back to the Constitution, read it.
This is the Constitution.
Yeah. Read it and realize we are back to it. We're living in it. Soaking in it now.
If I may invoke our co-host, Bill Buford, this is a Constitution, good and hard.
Yeah. But here's my question. Where did this thing come from? The America of the mind concept, which is what I call the leave it to beaverism of people saying, we got to get back to the Republic and back to when America was good, which is usually either, like, they never define that, but it's usually either 1776, which means they want to get back to slaves and smallpox, or it's,
or killing redcoats.
And killing redcoats. Yeah. And, you know, the Whiskey Rebellion was not long after that, where, you know, the St. George Washington murdered a bunch of Revolutionary War vets who had fought under him, you know, and he was killing them over refusing to pay taxes that were higher than the taxes they'd fought the British with over.
They fought the British over a 3% tea tax, and they fought Washington over 25% whiskey tax. And I'll say this about Obama. He hasn't sent soldiers out to collect a tax yet.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yet. Yeah. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of any politician.
So the question is, where does it come from? I don't know. It seems like it would have always been there.
Well, yeah. No, my question is, okay, the rest of the America of the mind equation, you know, is which is what I call this period that people want to go back to. It's usually either 1776 or, which, remember, like the war started in 1775 and it was still going on well after 1776. So basically they're saying, I want to go back to my neighbors dying in the streets when they say that. Or they want to go back to post-war, pre-hippie America and pre-civil rights America. Like they really, it's somewhere between 1946 and 1960, you know, when the economy was kind of falsely booming after the war and technology and free market was making it boom too. And, you know, blacks didn't yet have as many rights as they have now. And, hippies weren't mucking up the system and asking for a whole different system and smoking pot in the streets, you know, so that kind of Leave It to Beaver period, the period that takes place. I think that's where people want to go back to. And why go back, man? Go forward, because back wasn't good, and forward, not in the Soviet Obama sense.
Yeah, they didn't have smartphones.
Yeah, man, they didn't have computers. They didn't have they wouldn't let people like us on the radio between 1946 and 1960. I can guarantee you that. They probably would have jailed us.
I think most of the parchment worship comes about at least 20 to 30 years after ratification. Albert J. Nock wrote in, I believe it was a biography on Thomas Jefferson, and it was chapter 8. That's all I remember so far. You can find it on Ludwig von Mises Institute. He points out that the Constitution was not popular at the time, and that of the people at the 1787 convention, which, by the way, was only for the purpose of amending the Articles of Confederation, a vast majority of them were banksters, moneyed interest, and lawyers. It was mostly lawyers. And, of course, you had a couple other people in there, like Ben Franklin, who I don't believe was either. But I liked him.
He was just a weirdo who liked hanging out with ladies of the night and inventing things and running his own printing press. He was kind of like the feisty blogger of his day.
Yeah, but most of them wound up going into the government that they created. And many of them were appointed as senators. And interestingly enough, Madison, who was supposedly the father of the magic parchment, was not appointed as a senator, and he ran for Congress. And the argument was, don't vote for him. He's the one that gave us this monstrosity.
So it was a campaign slur. It was the Constitution. Having written the Constitution was a campaign slur back then. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And his big thing was, well, I need to get in there so we can finish the job and get that Bill of Rights in there. And incidentally, I believe they were looking at 200 possible amendments as far as the Bill of Rights. And the Federalists were like, no, we don't need those many rights enumerated. And the Anti-Federalists, who were completely opposed to the Constitution in the first place, meaning Patrick Henry and those, they didn't want a Bill of Rights written down because they saw it as a to-do list of things to take away.
Yeah.
And also, if you had 10 rights listed on there, then that would mean that those are the only 10 rights. Yeah. But if you look at where do your rights come from, do they come from God or do they come from government? Or do they come, if you're secular, are they inherent in your humanity?
Davi?
I think they're inherent in your humanity because they existed before they were written down. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you believe that these rights came from this piece of parchment, then that means that the people who were fighting for these rights before the document was signed were criminals.
Yeah, and it wasn't really parchment. It was vellum, which is sheepskin. So it's written by sheep for sheep on sheep.
Right.
And Derek and I had this discussion a few weeks ago when I was on with him. When it comes to taking away rights, is not on the responsibility of the person who's having their rights taken away to explain why they should keep their rights, is the responsibility of the person who wants to take those rights away to explain why that individual should lose their rights. So if somebody comes up with gun legislation because of Sandy Hook or some other shooting or something like that.
Or Katrina. Remember, they went door to door. The National Guard from out of state went door to door and beat up old ladies and took their little five-shot snub-nose revolvers. There's video of that.
Yes. It is the responsibility is the responsibility of the people taking the rights to explain why they're going to take rights away from everybody based on the actions of one person 600 miles away.
Yeah. Here's what I'm asking, though. And I don't know if you guys have an answer for this. I'm fiend sourcing it. I'm putting it out there for people to email us at talkback@freedomfiends.com because we don't take calls. We don't want to hear from people. Not during the show because we got a good vibe going. And the main reason we don't take calls is because people's audio is horrible. But if you want to have better audio, go to freedomfiends.com. Go on the right sidebar, scroll down. There's a picture of a microphone. It says, use the great microphone our hosts use. It's $50, and then you have to get a mic stand, which is like $12, so you can get it right in front of your mouth. You don't want it on the table like 4 feet away from you. And you need headphones, and you need a foam, you know, 50-cent pop screen, windscreen over it. So do that, and we still won't take calls from you, but at least you'll sound great doing your own podcast or radio show or talking to your friends on Skype or talking to clients. And if you do business over Skype, people will actually come back to you more and recommend you to friends more if you sound good. And you will if you get that mic and use what our hosts are using. So here's the question I have that I want to fiend source with you guys and with listeners. It seems to me like this thing of we got to get back to the Constitution has always been there. Like my dad has been saying that since I was fought, you know, since the Vietnam War, since I can remember. And he probably heard it from his dad, and he's 93 now, so that was a long time ago. I think he did hear it from his dad. So I want to know where it came from, and specifically if it was something made up by tyrants to kind of spread through, like, you know, the social media of the 1700s or 1800s, you know, which was basically probably Ben Franklin's printing press, you know, propaganda machine of Ben Franklin. I want to know where it came from, how it spread. And I guess I'm asking if there's a conspiracy theory here. If there's a, you know, people were like, oh, the natives are restless. We need to throw the dogs a biscuit. They're chomping at their leashes. Okay, make up something about, you know, venerating the founding fathers and as gods and getting back and kicking God off the throne and replacing him with these slave owners and tell people to parrot the idea that, you know, we have to get back to the Constitution.
I don't know. I think part of it is people believed the promise they were taught in government school.
Yeah.
And so there is a good instinct in wanting what you were promised, even though there's no critical thinking involved in that.
There you go. We'll be back with more after we go sell some things and give some things away on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Bless it.
Yeah.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Meow,
meow.
Meow,
meow.
Meow.
Freedom Fiends. This is Michael Dean. This is, we got Lou Sanderfine. Are you there, sir? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
This is a Chop Shop Rooster, and now that the election is over, I'm no longer being contacted by the people that want to be the government.
Yeah, the future government. And I think our third co-host here, Davi Barker, has been abducted by aliens and taken to Gitmo. Are you there, Davi? No. So go ahead, Lou. Tell me more about this conspiracy that people created probably in the late 1700s, early 1800s of, we got to get back to the Constitution when things were good, when in fact we're soaking in it. And basically, you know, anything that's unconstitutional is constitutional because the Constitution basically says they can do whatever they want. So what are your thoughts?
Well, one, I don't think that there was too much adoration for it in the 1700s. As I mentioned, at the time of ratification and even after that, it was very unpopular. As a matter of fact, the only place that it was put to a vote of the plebiscite, meaning the general voting public, was in Rhode Island.
Plebes.
Yeah. It was in Rhode Island where it was soundly rejected 11-1.
Yeah.
And the other places, it just got pushed through state ratification committees. It didn't go through the state legislature. The Federalists wound up getting separate ratification committees put together so that state legislatures would not protect their power from being taken away by the Fed goons.
Were they separate but equal?
No, because if they were equal, then the state legislature could have jumped in and said, no, take your cue and go pound sand with it.
Yeah.
But I think what happened was over time, it became popular because people talked about it as the Constitution. This is what restrains government, and this is what gives us our liberties. There's a quote attributed to Thomas Jefferson saying that the two enemies of the people are criminals and government. Let the second be restrained by the chains of the Constitution. And as we discussed earlier, there are no chains of the Constitution to restrain government. The chains or the leash is what restrains the people.
Yeah. And, you know, the book Hologram of Liberty by Boston Tea Party, I think writing under Kenneth Royce, the name Kenneth Royce, is a really good book. It's kind of an eye-opening book. It's kind of a complicated book for me. I've said that, and people, including Boston, have been like, really? But I don't know. It doesn't have a lot of pictures in it, so it's hard for me to follow. But now it's a book about how the Constitution isn't something that started out pure and has been perverted and deviated from over the years. It's something that started out perverted, and there are weasel words in it and phrases to basically allow what we have now and worse. So Hologram of Liberty, man. Check it out.
Yeah, the wording of the Constitution was a prototype for the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare.
And the Jail All the Patriots Act. So, Davi Barker, what say you? Do you have a theory about the conspiracy theory of whose doing it was to distract people with shiny things by saying, we've got to get back to the Constitution and making that a thing?
Well, so here's the thing. Language is the first government program. And so you know that when the Constitution is written and when people craft these campaign slogans and all this jazz, they are writing language that is designed to mislead, that is designed to lead astray, and is designed to enslave. And so there is a sense in which it's been a conspiracy all along. Like the moment the pen was put to paper, it was intended or it was encapsulated in the concept.
The moment the pen was put to sheepskin.
Sheepskin. Well, it's sheep paper. No. Okay, fine. Sheepskin.
By sheep or sheep on sheep.
The America of the mind that you talk about, I imagine, I mean, I'm just guessing. I'm not an expert or anything, but it seems to me like it's probably some sort of product of World War I or World War II, that like the idea of leading a war overseas for the principles of your country or whatever, like to rally people around something like that, which hadn't been done before.
Yeah, because World War I, you know, like literally about 100 years ago, is, you know, it's when the Federal Reserve was created 100 years ago. And it's really when the big march to federalism, instead of these, you know, disunified states that can do whatever they want, really got ramped up. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the era. But I really want to get feedback from people who know more about history than we do.
I know that there was a slogan popularized during and after World War I, which was 100% Americanism. And that was like a thing. And I don't quite know if that was a new concept or what, but they at least put a word on it. They put ism on America, so.
Yeah. Lou, you got a quick closing arguments here, counselor?
Yeah, I call it the grass is greener on the other side phenomenon. Because we weren't alive at that time, it must have been better. There's no way that it could be like it is today.
Yeah. We'll be back for hour two of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market. And then a couple minutes of national news that will probably scare the heck out of you. And then you could, because it's news and it's, you know, some of it's true and it's what happens out in the world. And it's usually about the government and it's probably about Obama and what a tyrant, a socialist, and his feet stink he is.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Meow.
Meow, 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 meow. Meow.
Meow, meow, meow.
Meow.
Woof, woof, woof.
This is the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza, broadcasting from Financial Beast Plaza on the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon on the artificial satellite LibHair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. We're keeping a sin flood of statism out of your brain by bombarding your frontal lobe and warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Can you feel it, Lou and Davi? Can you feel it, Lou and Davi? Is it working, Lou and Davi?
I feel you, bro. Okay.
I can definitely feel a decided lack of statism in my brain. I'm not sure if that proves the efficacy of the ion cannon, but it definitely is a component, I think.
Excellent. And again, I'd like to say good afternoon, Slidell. Good afternoon, New Orleans. We're welcoming WSLA 1560 AM in Slidell, Louisiana, which also saturates it's the most powerful station in the Tri-Swamp area, and it reaches all the way to New Orleans and, you know, about a couple million people listening. And I really dig that because, as I said, I lived in New Orleans for 2 months, which is not to say I'm of New Orleans. I want to make it clear. I'm not trying to be like, yeah, man, I'm one of you. You can't even explore any of the nooks and crannies and really get a feel for what's going on there in 2 months. And, you know, 2 months in New Orleans is really, as I said, just kind of more like you went there for a weekend and forgot to leave. It's not really living there, although I did get mail there. So I guess, you know, on Esplanade, 600 block Esplanade across the street from Checkpoint Charlie's above that little, I think it was an art gallery at the time, might be a restaurant now. But yeah, man. So we're talking to, I'm Michael W. Dean, Freedom Fiend. We're talking to Lusander Fiend, Freedom Fiend, and Davi Barker, Freedom Fiend. Are you there, gentlemen? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I've not been contacted by the government.
Okay. I'm safe and I make sounds.
All right. So we're totally into liberty and we think Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. And what else, Lou?
And he puts the execute in executive branch.
Yeah, man. He likes to kill people without.
You know, not only are we totally into liberty, we're into total liberty, which is something that I think a lot of our listeners might not be on board with if they spent some time thinking about it, but we hope that they will be in time.
Well, Davi, I am intrigued and wish to subscribe to your newsletter, so please tell me more.
So, yeah, what I mean by total liberty is I mean, we take the freedom position every issue, every time, which means that you should be, although you're not because of the state, but you should be free to live your life as you choose, so long as you're not harming anyone else. And that includes a lot of things on the left that they're right and right about and they're wrong about, and a lot of things on the right where they're wrong and right about that. So it's a grab bag of issues, but generally speaking, we're no government men.
Yeah, we are no government men. There's a T-shirt I really like. It says legalize everything. You ever seen that T-shirt?
I have seen that, at least a bumper sticker or something to that effect.
Yeah, and you know, obviously don't legalize murder, theft, fraud, rape, aggression, coercion, taxes, you know, keep all those things, make all those things illegal. But stuff where there's no victim, legalize it all, man. I want to, there's another thing I've seen going around, which is something like, you know, I'm in favor of gay married couples being able to use their AK-47s to protect their untaxed marijuana fields. And that's pretty much how I feel.
And there is one very important thing that we have to throw in there, and you kind of touched on it, Michael, and that is, as libertarians, voluntarists, anarcho-capitalists, abolitionists, whatever
no
you wish to use.
No government men. I like to say no government men.
Right. We are adherents to the zero aggression principle, or the non-aggression principle, if you will. And that quite simply is the idea that nobody has the right to initiate aggression against another person or their property.
Yeah. And that's in contrast, that's a common saying and a common phrase, and we agree with it. And we, you know, if you search non-aggression principle, it'll come up. There'll be lots of stuff you can read on the internet. But there's something that I have dubbed the aggression principle, which is what governments operate under. And it's basically the idea that they can scribble stuff down on paper, and if you don't like it, they will send men to your house. If you tell the men to go away, they will come back with more men with more guns, and then they will come in your house. And if you resist, they will shoot you in the head or put a gun to your head and take you to a cage. That is the aggression principle. And it's what every government in the world, to varying degrees, operate under. And don't fool yourself in thinking, if I vote for, you know, some guy that says, vote for me and I'll set you free, like the old Temptation song that was covered so well by Love and Rockets, you know, vote for me and I'll set you free means, vote for me and I'll set you free is a lie I'm telling until you vote for me and I'm elected. And then I am going to rob, steal, murder, aggress, tax, and cut backroom deals that are illegal, even though all that stuff's legal. Yeah.
Now, one thing on that, with the zero aggression principle, a lot of people say, oh, well, that's real cute. That's quaint. For those of you that are parents and you have children, and I'm pretty sure you raised your children to not hit and not steal from other people. It's known as kindergarten rules. For those of you that are fans of the Bible, you may recognize the zero aggression principle as being very close, or basically another interpretation of the golden rule of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I have homesteaded your aggression principle, Michael, and I've dubbed it the full aggression principle because I think full better explains it.
There you go. You can do that. I don't have a copyright on it, and I don't have a patent or a trademark on it, and I don't even believe in intellectual property. None of us do. Well, I don't want to be collectivist. Do any of you believe in any intellectual property, guys?
I own the physical matter of my brain, but yeah, once I release it out into the wild, the idea is out there, and it's not. The thing is, I don't own your brain, so once I put something in it,
I kind of believe in property. I kind of believe in trademarks, but not government enforced trademarks, and I think they could completely be enforced or not even enforced, but kept without government. You know, with things like using the blockchain and a hologram engraved onto an item or software package or an MD, what are those weird little files you use to make sure the file is right? Those little MD hashtag, those hash numbers on software. You can basically prove these days with technology that a physical object or a piece of software or media came from who is saying it came from, and it has not been altered. And that's really all trademark is. Like, the reason I say I believe in trademark is, like, I believe in the power of protecting your name, or I believe that the only thing you have really is your name and your reputation, which doesn't mean I think you can go after people for calling you a dum-dum on the internet.
Well, you really don't own your reputation, because your reputation is what others think
of
you.
There you go. I think you own the right to say you... I don't even know what you own. Nah, that's even too status, man. That's too old school thinking bleeding into what I'm trying to say. I think you own you, and that's it. Yeah, you're right. Reputation is based on other people's opinion of you. And it's funny that there are companies, you know, intellectual property companies out there that the service they offer is literally reputation protection. Like, if somebody's saying horrible things on the internet about your product and or service, even if it's warranted, you can pay companies to try to take the pee out of the pool of the internet.
Do they use a spoon?
I think they use a combination of government guns, hacker crackers, and
I looked into this. There's a website called Reputation Defender. There used to be an article out about me accusing me of conspiracy to murder this girl in Ohio I'd never heard of.
What?
But it was it's a long story, man. But the point is, it was the first thing that came up if you Googled my name, and it was just some idiot's blog post. But I like didn't have a name of my own, and so I looked into this service called Reputation Defender, and what they said that they do is they just saturate. They saturate the pool. They dilute the pee by adding more water.
So they make a bunch of fake blogs or splogs, spam blogs, and then just say great stuff about you and try to like to game the Google ranking.
Well, what they did, what they would agree to do is to create a paragraph or so of what you want your reputation to be. And then they were really good at like SEO, search engine optimization. And then they would make dummy websites until whatever it was you wanted out of the search engine was on the second page.
That's hilarious.
But they wanted like $5,000 or something. And so I was like, no, I don't think that's worth it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think that if you have a reputation worth defending, the quantity of positive things out there will outweigh the negative things just from you being a human on this earth who.
And they do now.
Yeah.
You can't even find that blog post about me anymore.
Yeah. And I think that the SEO or search engine optimization techniques, like all the attempts to game it, Google is so smart about figuring that stuff out that I don't really think there's a way to do it anymore.
Well, as soon as there is a way to do it, Google changes the algorithm, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. What say you, Lou?
Oh, you guys are talking technology. Give me a blackboard and I'm happy. Give me a blackboard and a rotary phone.
Yeah, you know what's funny about the way that the government works? You know, if you go into a public school now, like the blackboard has often been replaced with a big widescreen touch screen that's hooked up to an Apple or Windows computer in a lot of schools. And like even in rural Wyoming where I live, they had a bond issue to like raise taxes, sales tax, 1 cent. They approved this every couple of years. They just approved it again, like 70% to 50%. It's ridiculous. But, you know, people want to pay more for some reason. But the thing is, like, a lot of that, you know, some of it goes to, like, parks and rec and things like that. But some of it also went to buying iPads for students that couldn't afford them or for, like, every student or something like that. And it's like – the thing is, like, they have all this technology now that replaces blackboards and books. But they're still teaching the same stupid stuff they were teaching 100 years ago. Schools are still conformity factories where you learn to work in a factory. You know, there aren't even factories really in America anymore. But, you know, it's set to teach you to be a compliant soldier or factory worker where you show up at the same place at the same time, sit in neat little rows, memorize things, don't learn any critical thinking, and learn to not question authority. I mean, that's what public school is. You would be better off. My mother taught me to read. I could read in kindergarten. If she had just, dropped me off at the library every day for 12 years, I would have been much better off. And I really, like, anything I learned in public school that was ever useful to me, I learned by sixth or seventh grade and then just, you know, just went to the library and learned after that. Like, struggled to sit through the classes while stupider kids and mean kids just got in the way of learning. And, you know, tried to survive and get out of there until I could go learn. We'll be back with more after this trip to the farmer's market on Freedom Fiends. Worms.
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 Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the statists win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience a drop in blood pressure or laughter last longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Freedom Fiends. broadcasting from a windowless bunker in an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. So, Davi Barker, show me on the doll where public school touched you.
Well, you were talking about struggling to learn in spite of public school and wanting to spend all your time at the library. And I did the same thing. I had the same desire, but I did it clandestinely. What I did in public school was I took the dust jacket off of whatever textbooks, or sometimes they would have you wrap your textbook in like construction paper. And so I would find books that I wanted to read that were about the right size. And then I would wrap them in whatever they had us wrap the textbooks in and like write history on it. And so I was reading like Star Trek technical manuals or like other sorts of encyclopedia books or anything like that, because I wanted to learn. But yeah. I just wasn't interested in anything that they had to teach me.
Because they're dumb doo-doo heads.
The other thing is learning a pattern. If you want to survive public school, just learn the pattern. And then you don't really have to think or learn anything. Like in math class, for example, I don't know if you've picked up on this, but the unit right after the one you're struggling with is the shortcut. So if you just read one chapter ahead of the class, you end up doing like 10% of the work.
And, you know,
nice.
Public school would say that's cheating or gaming the system. But, I mean, the way I learn now is not linear. It's totally jumping around with everything, you know, like having 8 windows open on, 4 Wikipedia pages and falling down the wormholes of the citations on the Wikipedia pages, which is actually important. You shouldn't just learn from Wikipedia. It's a good jumping off point. But go to the citations at the bottom of the page for each part.
And you end up in really weird places when you do that, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, you start at, like, the 60s band The Archies and their song Sugar Sugar, and within 4 clicks, you're talking about, like, the renal system or something.
Yeah. Like, there's been this discussion about, is it the Braves or the Redskins or one of the sort of, like, Native American-based sports teams everybody's upset about right now? And so I started like Googling around, like looking for various sports names. Did you know that there used to be a team called the Atlanta Crackers?
Wow. Why were they called that? Were they sponsored by a cracker company or were they white guys?
I mean, it was white guys and it was explicitly white guys. This was at the time where there was a white league and a black league. There was also an Atlanta Black Crackers team.
There was the Negro League was the black baseball team.
Right. So that's what I mean. Atlanta had the Crackers and the Negro League had the Black Crackers. That was the Atlanta team. But no, what they meant by crackers, I think that what they meant is like hitting on the ball with a baseball bat. You call it like a crack.
Yeah.
And so it was like saying the hitters or something like that.
Yeah.
But I just think it's funny
how language changes. Yeah. I like in The Simpsons when they're making jokes about how old Mr. Burns is. And at some point you actually find out he's like 118. And the really bizarre thing is his mother is still alive. Like he calls her, he tries to duck calls from her and she gets him on the phone one time. And she lives on a plantation in the South. What's one of the things? He's like putting together a baseball team. And he's like, Smithers, scour the teams, find the major leagues, the minor leagues, the Negro leagues. And like, he doesn't realize like that's not been a thing for like 85 years or I don't know, something like that. But what are some other ones? Oh, he's at the post office as if he'd ever mail anything in the post office. And he says, this package needs to be on the 415 auto gyro to the Prussian consulate in, like some other country that doesn't exist now. Yeah.
Do you ever see the episode of Mr. Burns trying to figure out how to grocery shop on his own? And he's got a bottle of ketchup and a bottle of ketchup.
Yes.
And he can't figure out which one to
buy. It's the one where he loses all his money and Lisa helps him regain his fortune by recycling.
Right.
Yeah.
That was actually the first time I ever realized there were 2 spellings of ketchup. I mean, I was a kid at the time, so I just never picked up on it.
You were a kid at the time. I forget how much older than you cats I am, because you're like, I was a kid at the time. And I'm like, I was 30 living in a studio apartment in San Francisco by myself. Yeah.
Yeah, I was probably 16 or 17 when I saw that episode.
What say you, Lou?
I was an adult when The Simpsons came out. I like the one where Burns has to learn how to drive, and he's like, look, I'm a motorist. And he goes to the gas station and says, fill it up with petroleum distillates, post haste.
Which pedal is the velocitator and which is the decelerate tricks? Yeah. And when someone's braking in the window, he says, cease your ingress. He likes to use a lot of archaic terminology. I like Mr. Burns. I mean, I really hate him. He's hateable, but he's pretty funny. And how does that – think of some modern Mr. Burnses. Well, they probably have a lot of lawyers on staff, so we probably shouldn't do that on the radio. But we'll be back after this trip to the farmer's market. Yeah. We can purchase, we can study products and or services that we may wish to purchase on the Freedom Fiends. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends. And I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Excellent. Yes, Mr. Burns. Of course, Mr. Burns. Right away, Mr. Burns.
I still haven't figured out what that voice is in that video we saw. What? Lou, I asked Davi, maybe you know, what is the voice that's in a cartoon or a movie that has a subservient assistant to some creepy, evil overlord type hero? And the assistant is like, yes, Mr. So-and-so. Of course, Mr. So-and-so. Right away, Mr. So-and-so. Who is that?
Renfeld.
From, that's right.
I don't know. But
who's Renfeld?
I don't know. It's some lackey henchman type.
Yeah, man. Yeah, there was a band
called... I, like, scoured YouTube for, like, every lackey henchman I could think of, and I couldn't find it.
Yeah, man. I think
Renfeld... Did you Google lackey henchman?
No. It is Baxter Stockman from the Ninja Turtles, though, but he's doing an impression of the original.
Yeah. Yeah. So, go ahead.
I think with Renfeld, his big thing was the laugh.
Okay. Renfeld. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm just pulling that out.
There was a band called Renfeld in L.A. It was some of the people from the band Green Jello. Remember them?
Green Jelly.
Green Jelly. Yeah, they had to change the name. That's right.
Attack of the Serial Killers.
Yeah. I played in a band with the keyboard player from that band. We played in a band together called Insecto, which was kind of the coolest band I was ever. Well, it wasn't the coolest band I was ever in, but it was definitely the most fun I ever had in a band. Because it wasn't my band. I didn't write any of this. I was replacing a guy who quit on no notice. And I just, learned this. It was my roommate's band. And I learned all the songs in a weekend. And literally, I didn't have to put up flyers. I didn't have to book gigs. I just put on a skeleton costume and played, really cool guitar. I didn't even have to sound check. I would literally show up. I didn't even own an amp or a guitar at the time. I would just show up and, put the costume on 10 minutes before the show, walk on stage, play to a packed house, and then leave with, a lady usually. So it was fun.
That's
man.
Cool.
Yeah.
kind of like PJ Harvey showing up, pulling her microphone out of her purse, singing some songs, and then bugging out.
That was Natalie Merchant, not PJ.
Natalie Merchant, my bag.
Yeah. It was, I grew up in Jamestown. I grew up in upstate New York and went to college in Jamestown, New York, which is upstate New York. And the 10,000 Maniacs were, you know, they were the local band. This is before they got signed. And they played every weekend somewhere in the area. And it was really boring in Jamestown, New York. So I've seen them about 70 or 75 times. And yeah, Natalie Merchant was a prima donna even back then. She would like, you know, they were playing at a club to like 120 people or something. And the band would show up at, you know, dinner time, like do a sound check, show up when it's still light out, go across the street for dinner, leave someone there to watch the equipment so it doesn't get stolen. You know, come back to start at 9:30, and Natalie Merchant would show up at 9:29, pull a microphone out of her purse, put it on the mic stand, you know, plug it in. They would have like an XLR cable waiting there for her. She'd do the show, do her twirling dervish dances and knock over some tables. She was wild and crazy, man. She used to be like, she used to scream into the mic and she used to knock over beers and stuff like that before she got tamed by the record industry. And then, at the end of the show, she would put her microphone in her purse, grab one or two young men or ladies or both and leave with them.
Hey, if it works for her.
Nice work if you can get it. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Modern Mr. Burns's. You were going to talk about one of them.
Well, there's Peter Griffith's father-in-law.
Griffin.
It's Griffin.
Yeah.
And I can't remember his name, but he has the family guy. It's the fan, but I don't remember the character's name. But he's
Peter Schmidt.
Yes, Mr. Peter Schmidt. And he's totally Mr. Burns. Like he doesn't think that Peter is good enough for his daughter, and so he offers to pay him off.
Yeah. Yeah. He makes an indecent proposal for him to leave. Yeah.
It's like the opposite of an indecent proposal.
Well, it is the theme of some movie. No, indecent proposal is where the millionaire tries to sleep with someone's wife. There's a movie or a classic book. I can't remember what it is, but yeah, go on.
Other Mr. Burns's, I don't know. I mean, he's sort of the quintessential anti-capitalist figurehead, if that makes sense.
Mr. Burns, he's a total corporatist.
No, but he's a caricature is my point. He's like a character created by people to make fun of evil capitalists. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And by evil capitalists, you mean the ones that provide stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead. Say that again, Lou.
I said, and by an evil capitalist, you mean the people that provide us goods and services.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the difference between capitalism and corporatism, because here's the thing, like, a lot of people in the world are angry, in case you haven't noticed. Nobody really likes what's going on. They all think it could be done different. You know, from libertarians to anarcho-capitalists to, Occupy Wall Street to the Tea Party, they all think they could do it right and that the people doing it are doing it wrong. Here's the thing, like Occupy Wall Street shouldn't be occupying Wall Street. They should be occupying the Federal Reserve, because literally without the government, Wall Street wouldn't exist like it would. There would be capitalism and there would be biggish business, but there wouldn't be huge business that can tell the government to point guns at you and make you sign up for healthcare and make you pay for wars, non-defensive wars, and all of the sort of mucky-muckian that governments do that is not capitalism. It's literally fascism. The term fascism has kind of been co-opted to mean tyrannical. Like, you're a fascist basically means you believe things I don't like. That's what it means to most people now. But the original meaning of it, it did involve tyranny, but it involved tyranny. Literally, what fascism is an economic system where all of the means of production are privately owned, but totally controlled by the government. So it's not quite mm-hmm. communism. In communism, the means of the production are owned by supposedly the people, but in actuality, a small group of people who are rich and live off the fat of the backs of the workers. But in fascism, like, you know, if they don't like you, they'll kill you and take your factory and give it to someone else. But if they like you and you'll play ball, they let you keep your factory, but they totally, you know, if they say, you're not going to make bicycles anymore, you're going to make rifles, you have to do it. That kind of thing. You know, it's protectionism.
Right. Well, it's also a partnership type deal too. One hand scratches the other.
Yeah. And when people say, When we make the argument that the private market could take care of infrastructure better than governments, one of the common things that statists throw back at us of, you know, after they say, who would build the roads? And if you don't like government, move to Somalia, which are both fallacies, and we can explain why. The next thing they usually say is, oh, they've tried privatizing railroads, and they've tried privatizing water, and they've tried privatizing jails, and it doesn't work. But that's not really privatization. That's rewarding friends of the fat cats, the contract. You know, literally, like, who would build the roads without the government? Somebody that would do it without graft and without cutting corners and making it as good as possible, instead of like giving the construction contract to the brother-in-law of the sheriff, who's going to charge twice as much as the free market and do half as good of a job.
Well, see, here's the thing. I went to a school like owned and operated by the government, where we read a textbook which was written and approved by a committee of government people. And in that textbook, there was a paragraph that said we needed the government to make railroads. And so that's what I believe.
And if you look at Article 6 of the Constitution, it will tell you that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. All right, who's going to build the roads? Okay, Carl Fisher. In 1911, I believe it was, he privately built a highway that went from San Francisco, California to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He built another one that went from Canada down to Miami Beach, Florida. Incidentally, he was one of the major developers of Miami Beach, Florida in the first place. He did not have a single toll booth on there, and he did not accept a single tax dollar to build that road. He got it with private contributions from corporations, small businesses. Even that rotten scumbag Woodrow Wilson pulled $5,000 out of his own checkbook and contributed to it. That is the market at work.
And I mean, I guess the real question is, who will cut the ribbon when working people finish building a road?
Politicians. Yeah, that's true. And on the other end of that, who will go out with a gold shovel and dig one shovel full of dirt at the beginning of the project?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I riff on railroads for a minute?
I would love riffed on who would build the railroads. I'll be back.
Okay, James J. Hill would build the railroads. James J. Hill ran the Great Northern Railroad, and it was the only – how did it go? It was a privately built transcontinental railroad. He went across the Rocky Mountains through the northern part of the United States. Because he had to do this on his own and he had to economize his scarce resources and costs, he – had a scout go out for several months looking for the lowest pass across the Rocky Mountains. Because he didn't want to try and have his trains go straight uphill, he was the inventor of the switchback, where you go from side to side and on the way up.
Now, oh, wow.
Now, when you look at the government fascist railroads, the builders of these railroads were paid by the mile for the amount of track they lay down. So you can imagine that it had more twists and turns than a ride at Six Flags or Cedar Point or something else. They also got paid a bonus for going over hilly territory. So they obviously did not miss a hill. They also got paid extra for building in swampland. So obviously they did not miss a swamp. When they laid down tracks in the wintertime, it was all destroyed by springtime. So guess what? They got paid to redo it. Now, what James J. Hill did was he made his rail lines flat. He avoided the hills. He avoided the swamps. He negotiated rights of way with the Indians rather than using his political connections to have the military go out there and murder them. He also built up towns along his rail lines and businesses. He was also providing special discounted rates to his best customers, like let's say a lumber company, because this is the mid-1800s and lumber is, you know, a very huge thing because that, you know, everything's being built up at the time. And when the subsidized corporatist tax eater railroads were going belly up, he was charging lower prices than they were, and he was profitable.
Excellent. Well, there you go.
Yep. And that's more economics than you'd get in 12 years of school right there. And it's more truth about economics than you'd get in 12 years of public school.
I didn't learn diddly squat about economics in school, except for FDR and the New Deal brought us out of the Great Depression, which was all horse hockey.
Yeah.
For our listeners out there, if you want to learn about economics, go to Mises.org. That's Mises.org.
Yeah.
They have audio lectures on there. They have articles. They have books. They have everything that you need. You can go in there for a week and not come back out, and you learn more than a college graduate.
Yep. And if you're gone for more than a week, we'll send someone after you to get you back.
And it will cost you zero to use it.
And you'll come back with special knowledge to help society, which means you're a hero.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends, it is time for the redemption in the third act. We've been talking about politics, economics, Mr. Burns on The Simpsons.
Unintended lessons of public school.
Yeah, so let's tie it all together in a pretty ribbon for the people. Go.
Sure. I think the ribbon that I would cut is when I was in school, civics and economics were not separate classes. When I was in high school, it was one class, civics and economics, as if these are the same thing. And they're really like dramatically different things. Like civics is like how the government works, meaning like what all these things, what's in the Constitution, what are the branches of government, how are they stealing from you today? And economics is almost, I mean, it's not almost, it is a science. Maybe it's a soft science, like a social science, but
it's a science with kind of two distinct schools that contradict each other. The Austrian school of economics, which is not popularly practiced by government politicians, but it's the truth. It's basically the free market form. And then there's the social planning form. What's the name for that one, Lou? The
Keynesianism.
What? Yeah. Yeah, we lost Lou.
But the point is, they're not the same thing. They don't belong in the same class. And by putting them in the same class, it like sends the message. These things are so intertwined that obviously government needs to be intervening in the economy because, you know, like because it is we're taught centrally planned economics in an economics class. And so you put it right next to and here's the central plan and how it works and how it comes about. And yeah,
it's kind of like I'm trying to think of an analogy, but it'd be kind of like I don't know, the mafia teaching you why the mafia needs to protect you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The small business bodega, that is taught by the mafia. So it's like a pyramid marketing scheme where the mafia opens bodegas that open smaller bodegas.
And front groups for other bodegas. Yeah.
But so the thing is, like on the first day, they show you that graph, right? Supply and demand. And they explain these two curves and where they cross. That's where the sort of market price is. And finding that price will, you know, is the way to maximize satisfying demand and profit at the same time. And that made total sense to me. It was like a light bulb going off in my head. And I was excited to learn about this. And everything else in the class from that day forward seemed like it contradicted that first lesson. And I just like I was turned off from economics because of this class. And it wasn't until years later that I got into it and understood it.
Yeah. And the problem with government economics, you know, the bad kind, Keynesian economics, is that it's kind of like the public schools, which, as I said, are all based on the Prussian model, which is a, you know, over 100-year-old model of sitting in tiny rows, learning to be a good cog in the machine, or be a good soldier, be a good cog in the military machine. So
it's an assembly line for your brain.
Yeah. And it's a really old way of doing things, of having a brick and mortar central location for something, you know, a dedicated system for teaching, a place for teaching where you have to go to be taught. That's ridiculous. And if the internet has shown us nothing, the one thing it's shown us, other than everything, and other than that we don't need the government, the one thing it's really shown us is the power of decentralization. Like, you know, take, for example, the Linux computer system, which was, you know, started by three guys and then contributed to by thousands of people. And it's, you know, it is better than Windows and Mac. It doesn't have the market share, but it does really, because most of the it does not have the market share in home and devices. It kind of does now, though, because Android phones are basically a Linux-based operating system. But also, the infrastructure of the internet, all these millions of server computers in racks in air-cooled, climate-controlled rooms, those are almost all exclusive, almost a high 90-some percent of them run on Linux, because they have to buy so many of them. They don't want to pay for a separate license for each one. And because Linux is very easy to administrate, it's got a lot of security features, and, you know, it's free, and you can replicate it on 1,000 or 1,000,000 machines really easily with a click of a mouse, if you know what you're doing. And, you know, Bitcoin has proved you don't need even a central money system. And I really like the idea of decentralization. Like, for instance, this show, like, I called up, hey, we're doing a show today. Who can do it? You know, because two other people canceled, and now Davi and I are on, and I think Lou's been droned. Are you there, Lou? Yeah, we can barely hear Lou, though. I think his mixer overheated again. But the show still goes on, because there's no central point of failure. Davi Barker and Lou Sanderfine, we are glad that we can hear him a little bit, that we can hear Lou, to know that he's not been droned. He's still there. He's just, his mixer's on a little break. Taking some heat off. And Lou Sanderfine, I know you can hear us, but we can't hear you over the music. So thank you for your service, Lou Sanderfine. And Davi Barker, thank you for your service. Very much. It's been a cool show, man. I heard Lou go, worms, in the background. Do it loud, Lou. Worms.
Wimes.
Wimes. There you go. Yep. We'll get that fixed and get him ready up. This is a teaching hospital, so we do point out our mistakes. We don't try to hide them, but we also have solutions. There is a solution with cooperation of the free market, people working together, and no central point of failure. That's who'd build the roads. That's how you replace every so-called service the government does, and they do it with a gun to your head, which ain't cool.